Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. For this holiday season, we're revisiting some of our favorite Modern Love essays that were adapted for the Modern Love television show. Today, we're revisiting an essay by Eve Pell called "The Race Grows Sweeter Near Its Final Lap." It's the basis for episode 8 of the Amazon show. Singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter reads us Eve's story. She's known for songs like "Down at the Twist and Shout," "I Feel Lucky," and her rendition of "Passionate Kisses." Here she is with Eve Pell's essay, "The Race Grows Sweeter Near Its Final Lap."
Sam and I dated for 2 years. Then when I turned 70 and he 80, we had a joint 150th birthday party and announced our engagement. We married a year later. We came from very different backgrounds. Sam, a Japanese-American who had been interned in the camps during World War II, worked his way through college and was happily married to his Japanese-American wife for more than 40 years until her death. I grew up as a fox-hunting debutante whose colonial New York ancestors were lords of the manor of Pelham. Typical of my much-married family, I'd been divorced twice. We belonged to the same San Francisco area running club. He was a rarity, a charming, fit, single man of 77. I wanted to get to know him better. I devised a plan. Our mutual friend Janet had in her house a small movie theater that seated about a dozen people. She often had parties there. I called her. "This is very seventh grade," I began, "but I'd like you to invite Sam to one of your screenings. I'll come to any movie he's coming to." Soon after, she called, "He's coming on Thursday." There were 8 or 10 of us there that evening. After the movie, as we were all standing around and chatting, someone mentioned "The Motorcycle Diaries," a new film about Che Guevara. "I'd like to see that," I said. "I would too," Sam said. Short pause. I held my breath. He looked at me. "Would you like to go?" Squelching the urge to high-five Janet, I said yes. We set a date for the following week. He'd meet me at the theater. But when the day came, our movie was sold out. What to do? We looked at what else was playing and chose "Sideways." I have only a vague memory of some plot about men and wine, but a sharp memory of sitting next to Sam. And when "Sideways" was over, we decided that since we hadn't met our objective, we'd see "The Motorcycle Diaries" another day. Sam and I began running together. Early on, however, I was faced with a dilemma. At a half marathon in Humboldt County, he went out fast and was way ahead. But as the miles went by, I crept closer and closer, and I could see from the way he was running that I had more energy left. What to do? Should I beat him and risk his being resentful? Some men really hate being bested by a woman. I could slow down and let him beat me, but that would be patronizing to him and make me resentful. Then I thought, if he gets annoyed that I ran faster, he's not the man for me. So I sped up, patted him on the behind, and said, "Come on!" I ran on to the finish, and as it happened, he couldn't keep up. But I needn't have worried. Sam didn't get upset. In fact, he seemed pleased I had run well. And so we grew together. Sam and I often ate at Chinese restaurants, where I received some fortune cookies that truly lived up to their name. Two of my favorites. Persevere with your plans, and you will marry your love. Stop searching forever. Happiness is just next to you. One evening at the movies, after we'd been seeing each other for several weeks, I felt his hand on mine. If I close my eyes and concentrate, I can recapture the moment, the dark of the theater, the warmth of his hand, my happiness. One might not expect an old grandmother to feel a surge of romance, but I did. And I knew that his reaching out was a brave gesture. I reciprocated, inviting him in for tea when he took me home. I have a narrow, uncomfortable sofa in my living room, poorly designed for intimacy. But nevertheless, that was where we sat, and that was where we kissed before he went home. There was a complication. I could feel that Sam was conflicted about our budding relationship because of his loyalty to his wife, Betty, who had died 6 years before. In my younger years, I would have felt competitive, as if his love for her meant less for me. Now I knew differently, and one night I spoke my mind. "I know that you loved Betty very much, and I have great respect for your marriage," I began. "But I think you have room in your heart for me, too." He hugged me and went home. Several days later, he asked, "Are you going to run the 5K in Carmel next week?" "Yes." "Would you like to go together?" "Yes." I had no idea what he had in mind, but that became clear a few days later. We were talking after a run. Sam looked bashfully down at his shoes as he said, "I have made a reservation in Carmel for a room with one bed. Is that okay?" It was. I realized that the last time he had been dating was in the early 1950s, before his marriage, and he had entirely missed the change in customs of the 60s and 70s. When he began staying over at my house, he always stopped the newspaper at his house so the neighbors wouldn't know what was going on. But for all his adherence to decorum, he was a true romantic. A few months later, when we were both in Europe on separate trips, we met in Barcelona. This was a leap. Traveling together in a foreign country would be a more exacting test of our relationship than our jaunts to movies and races. But in this, as in almost everything else, Sam was perfect. When I arrived at our hotel, he was there with wine, chocolates, and flowers. For all our anxiety about traveling together, we meshed. On the flight home, Sam declared, "We must never travel separately again." From then on, we were well and truly together. We had few outside pressures. He was retired with a comfortable pension. I was a freelance writer with an outside income. Our middle-aged children were on their own. We had nothing to do but love each other and be happy. Sam and I did things younger people do. We ran and raced. We fell in love and traveled and remodeled a house and got married. After the ceremony, we flew to Hawaii. "You must never call this a honeymoon," he told me. "That way, no one can ever say that the honeymoon is over." We traveled to Italy to compete in the 2007 World Masters Athletics Championships, what I fondly call the Geriatric Olympics, where we both won gold medals in our respective age brackets, 70 to 74 for me, and 80 to 84 for Sam. At home, we planted a garden. I finished writing a memoir. Every morning, we did push-ups. Every evening, we sat on the rim of our bathtub and flossed our teeth. He called me sweetheart. He never forgot an anniversary, including our first movie date. I gave him flowers on Betty's birthday. old love is different. In our 70s and 80s, we had been through enough of life's ups and downs to know who we were, and we had learned to compromise. We knew something about death because we had seen loved ones die. The finish line was drawing closer. Why not have one last blossoming of the heart? I was no longer so pretty, but I was not so neurotic either. I had survived loss and mistakes and ill-considered decisions. If this relationship failed, I'd survive that too. And unlike other men I'd been with, Sam was a grown-up, unafraid of intimacy, who joyfully explored what life had to offer. We followed our hearts and gambled, and for a few years, we had a bit of heaven on earth. Then one day, the tear duct in Sam's right eye didn't work, and soon his eye began to bulge. One misdiagnosis and failed treatment followed another until there was a biopsy. A week later, his doctor called to say Sam had stage 4 cancer, that he would not survive. There was the agony of Sam's fight to live, which he waged with grace and courage. Desperate to lessen his sufferings, I learned to give hospital nurses $20 Starbucks cards to get special care for him. Every day, I brought him bowls of his favorite watermelon balls. But one morning, he couldn't eat even those. And a few hours later, he died. Not only was I happy during my short years with Sam, I knew I was happy. I had one of the most precious blessings available to human beings. Real love. I went for it and found it. I yearned desperately for Sam, but the current pain is very worth it. He and I often told each other, we are so lucky, and we were. Young love, even for old people, can be surprisingly bountiful.
Mary Chapin Carpenter, reading Eve Pell's essay, The Race Grows Sweeter Near Its Final Lap. Mary Chapin told us that this essay jumped out at her, in part because of one of her own songs, called Old Love.
When I was making the record that song is on, I was talking to this dear, dear friend of mine, great bass player, Glenn Worf. And he and his wife have been married for a very long time, and they go up to this cabin up in Wisconsin. And when they're not there, their neighbor, an old fellow, checks the cabin for them. And one day, Glenn and this neighbor were having a long talk, and I think the neighbor had been married like, 60 years, something incredible like that. And Glenn said, how did you do this? How did you stay married for so long? And Glenn said he just had one sentence in his answer, which was, nobody left. And I just love that. Nobody left.
I want old love, the kind that holds on when it's told love that all hope is gone. Against all odds, wagers and prayers to the wall.
Mary Chapin Carpenter singing Old Love from her 2012 album, Ashes and Roses. Thanks to Concord Music Group for giving us permission to play some of Old Love. And special thanks to Mary Chapin Carpenter for reading this week's essay. As for Eve, how has she recovered from her young love later in life? We'll hear how she's doing today after the break.
Forgiven and done.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And now a postscript from the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times, Daniel Jones, and the author of this week's essay, Eve Pell.
This year marks the fifth anniversary of Sam's death. I can't believe that this much time has gone by. You couldn't not like Sam. That was the thing. One friend of mine, when he heard I was going out with Sam, turned to me and said, "You know, anytime I see Sam Hirabayashi, it's a good day." And a lot of people felt that way. He was just dearly loved, and I was incredibly lucky to be that close with him. After Sam died, I was a total wreck. And I went to a series of meetings organized by hospice for people who had been bereaved, who had lost their spouses. And there I met this guy who had lost his wife at the same time I lost Sam. And when the meetings were over, he came up to me and said, "You know, would you ever like to go for a walk or something?" And I had liked him, and I said, "Sure." And so for about a year and a half, we kind of had coffee, or we walked, or we grieved about our dead spouses, and we became friends. And then after a while, the relationship, it took a little romantic turn. And now I have somebody else in my life, and it's very sweet indeed. I feel hugely lucky.
Eve's essay is so charming to me in how she felt like she was in middle school again with this guy. And, you know, why shouldn't she feel that way? This is new love. This is a discovery. There's this sense of surprise that new love feels young, you know? New love doesn't feel old, even if you think you are old. It teaches us, in a sense, that we're never too old or too wised up to feel young love. And you have to be open to it. But if you are, and it happens, it can really feel like a miracle.
The whole business of what's possible in older age is of huge interest to me. I was aware the other day that there are three R's that have kind of motivated my life: running, writing, and romance. And actually, I've started taking African drumming lessons, so I've added a fourth R, which is rhythm. Next year, I will be 80, and I'm looking up where the most fun international competitions for track and field are. And the amazing part to me is the amount of fun you can have when you're old. We're not just sort of dead and dry and done for. Many ways we can be just as foolish as younger people. And the flip side of that is we can have as much fun.
So there was a study that was published about happiness throughout life, and it talks about this U-shaped happiness curve where people are at their sort of peak of happiness in their late teens and into their early 20s. And then as they get married and have children and work all the time, that happiness quotient continues to go down this long slope into this sort of trough. And then that curve starts to ascend again and go up the other side of the U. And I find this idea fascinating. And it's completely borne out by the submissions and stories that I receive at Modern Love. The younger writers write with this mixture of hope and anxiety. People in midlife mostly write with a sense of disillusionment, of questioning, like, is this really what it's all about? And then people who are older almost uniformly write with a sense of gratitude and appreciation. And this is the sweet spot that Eve Pell's essay hits. You've been through it all, and you know what a good thing is. And you can grasp it and hold on to it and appreciate it because you know it's not going to last forever.
That's Dan Jones, editor of Modern Love for the New York Times, talking about Eve Pell's essay, "The Race Grows Sweeter Near Its Final Lap." Now, a lot of people connected with Eve's story. In fact, after writing the piece for Modern Love, Eve was asked to write a book about the topic. So she traveled around the country interviewing people who'd found love after age 60. She tells their stories in the book Love Again, The Wisdom of Unexpected Romance. Eve's turned into something of a romance guru, and her inbox is filled with people looking for advice. She calls them Ask Eve letters.
Most of them are from women who are, oh, say, 55 and older, are lonesome and looking for a man in a relationship, and they're having a hard time finding guys. Because, you know, in those of us who are older now, we grew up at an age when these kind of things were not particularly possible or might have been even scandalous. The fact that people can fall wildly passionately in love when they're ready for Medicare is, to me, a hugely cheerful, optimistic situation. And so if somebody is kind of on the verge of falling in love or has a question or a problem about it, I may not know all the answers, but I'm really eager to be as helpful as I possibly can and as supportive as I possibly can.
Thanks to Eve Pell, author of The Race Grows Sweeter Near Its Final Lap. And thanks to Dan Jones, the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times. Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. This episode was produced by Jessica Alpert. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at the New York Times. Additional music, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And by the way, my other job is hosting an NPR show called On Point. Check it out in your podcast feed. This is our last episode of Modern Love Podcast for the year 2019. So we're wishing you peace and love. We'll see you in 2020.